Hey friends, welcome to the Next Step Leadership Podcast, a conversation dedicated to helping you make your next step your best step. I'm Tracy Reynolds, and my partner for the Next Step journey is Chris Maxwell. Together we hope to inspire, assist, and create the confidence you need to take your next step in your personal growth, spiritual growth, vocation, or even your calling. Thanks for joining us. Well, come on, let's dive into this week's episode of Next Step Leadership.
Hello, my name is Chris Maxwell. Welcome again to Next Step Leadership Podcast. Thank you for taking time to listen in on the conversations that I have with Tracy Reynolds and the dialogue we have with others who are willing to just kind of tell us their stories. Tracy, I'm very excited about this podcast.
Me too, man. It's always great to have a friend on. We meet a lot of new friends, but today I'm going to say he's an old friend because that would imply that he's old. But we have a friend we've known for a long time. His name's Steve Ely. He's the Director of Clergy Development for the International Pentecostal Holiness Church. And he and his wife, Julie, live in Oklahoma City. In about 2007, they planted a church there called Passion Church. And he's no stranger to ministry. He was raised in a minister's home. He's got an amazing legacy in full-time ministry. He's an author, and his most recent book we want to talk about is a great book. It's entitled Climate Change, but it's not about what you think it's about if you just go by the title. So we're going to dive into that. Steve, it's great to have you with us, man. Welcome.
Thank you. It's so good to see you guys, talk to you guys, get to hang out just a few minutes. It's great.
Absolutely. Well,
I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, we want to make sure that our folks that listen to us know a bit more about you. A lot of them know you already, Steve. But rewind and tell us some of the early story and how you came to faith, how you got to be sitting in the seat across the country from us today.
Well, you're right. I have a pretty powerful, I think, heritage. I came to know Christ when I was seven. I can still vividly remember that moment in a Pentecostal Holiness church in a West Oklahoma town by the name of Anadarko. My pastor was John Polisino, and that Polisino name, for those on the East Coast, probably doesn't mean anything, but out here, for me and my family, the Polisinos are woven throughout our story. And so he was the senior pastor, and I remember him preaching, and I went to the altar and gave my heart to the Lord, and just continued in that journey. My father's been in ministry all of my life. He was a student at Oklahoma University studying to be a doctor, and his roommate led him to the Lord, and then not too long after that introduced him to my would-be mom. Mm-hmm. And they got married, and then Dad started in ministry. I'm a third-generation minister. My mom's mom planted a church in Purcell, Oklahoma, and pastored that church until she was 101.
Really?
And so, little bitty holiness church. And so, all I've known is ministry all my life. I kind of kid people and say, but I'm not sure it's really a joke. I think it's true. You know, I never said I wanted to be a police officer or a fireman or a doctor. I always said I wanted to be a preacher. Mm-hmm. And probably five sermons I ever developed was a message. I don't even remember the content now, but it was the title was I Was Born to Preach, and that's mm-hmm. how I feel. I feel mm-hmm. like that's just part of my heritage and who I was and what I wanted to be. So out of that, when I got old enough to drive, I went to another church in a little town in West Oklahoma called Apache, Oklahoma. And that season of my life, it's still who I am today. That nobody knows about that church, but that little church has some of the most godly people in it. I know they taught. My dad had actually pastored that church for a year when I was a year old, so I learned to walk physically there. And then when I was old enough to get there on my own, I learned to walk spiritually there. And again, that Polisino theme runs through my pastor and his wife. She was a Polisino. And so it's just this long, winding path of people and places that have impacted me, you know. And then I went to Southwestern Christian University, graduated there. didn't, if you'd asked me when I was a junior in college, will you ever be a pastor? I would have laughed at you. Mm-hmm. I didn't think I had it, had that in me. Mm-hmm. But then as a senior, took a journey back east with my dad. He was preaching revivals. And so during the summer, my junior summer, he was preaching a revival in McCall, South Carolina. Mm-hmm. And I held a youth crusade during the day. Mm-hmm. And out of that, once I graduated, the pastor called me. And it'll be a familiar name for you guys, Harrison Lampley. Buddy Lampley called me and said, would you come and be my youth pastor at McCall, South Carolina? Mm-hmm. And I will half my salary to make sure that you have pay.
Wow.
Now, it was $6,800 a year. So
yeah.
I wasn't getting rich and neither was he. But so I moved all the way across the country. It was a great place for me to start. I was there 22 months and then got married to Julie, brought her out from Oklahoma. And we moved to Greenville, North Carolina, and for the next 6.5 years, I served as youth pastor. And that was really formative in my ministry as well. And then finally moved back to Oklahoma City and started working at Southwestern. And then after 2 years of being campus pastor, moved over to the headquarters and became national youth director.
Right.
And did that for 7.5 years.
Well, it was in that season that I met you edged out to the college a couple times to speak during that time. And you were one of those guys that I always felt like, I mean, if this guy lived closer in, we'd be buddies. I just admired you.
Yeah,
there was authenticity. You had a creative way of sharing your faith, and you loved the next generation.
Yeah. Yeah, for me, I've become more aware of this as I'm getting older. There are just certain people. I think I think people misuse this concept of a David-Jonathan relationship because they always put Jonathan almost like he's a under David. Mm-hmm. But the truth is he was next in line. So by hierarchy, it was really the other way. But I don't think that matters. I just think it's this concept of your heart knitting with people. And they're always, I've noticed it more, like I say, as I've gotten older, I'm more aware of it. I don't connect like that with everybody. By nature, most people would laugh at this and probably think I'm kidding. But by nature, I'm an introvert. It's just something happens to me when I get a microphone. I don't know what that is. But anyway, but there are some people that I just instantly connect with. And you guys have been that some of those for me, just like an instantaneous connection where our hearts knit together. I think it's just the passion for the next generation, maybe what it's around. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I felt the same way. We just connected. You know, and those relationships are valuable. Mm-hmm. I think we underestimate. That's the other thing I've seen as I've gotten older, as men and women who have those connections, they just disengage. Mm-hmm. And I had a period in my life where I disengaged and it cost me, and we can talk about that. It cost me big time. I just see it. I just see people I think those relationships are key. Mm-hmm. To remaining healthy and being able to sustain ministry. And for me, as an introvert, I have to be really intentional about it because mm-hmm. I just thought it would happen naturally. And instead, what I found is I isolated myself. Mm-hmm. And that's where the price came. And we can talk about that. Yeah. But so, yeah, I appreciate you guys and the relationship we developed for sure.
We are honored to count you as a dear friend and to see all that God is doing and has done in your life. We'll take us back to when you were at Southwestern, and then you made the transition to pastor, and then now you've made another transition since then. So talk to us about that.
So interestingly enough, two things happened. I'd been at Greenville, North Carolina, at the first church there as a youth pastor for about 4.5 years, and begin to complain to God. I know nobody else does that, but I had this long drive to work, and I can vividly remember just giving God the business. I don't know if that makes sense. I was having a come to Jesus talk with Jesus. You know, I was like, come on, man, what are you doing? I feel forgotten here. I feel like I've done all I can do. And I feel this pull on me to help other youth pastors, et cetera, et cetera. And so after about the 15-minute drive, I'm about to step out of my car in the parking lot of the church. And it's probably one of the few times I can say I felt like I heard God audibly. Mm-hmm. It's like, speakers went off in my head, and I heard him say, until you take care of the guys in your youth ministry that are called into ministry, I cannot take you to a stage to help other youth pastors. And I was like, what? And I started looking around, and I had, I think it was 11 young men in my youth ministry that felt some call towards the ministry. And I wasn't doing anything with them. So I took the next 2.5 years, probably some of the most fruitful years of my ministry, and started this thing called the Swordsman. And we would, I was trying to help them learn how to preach. I was giving them opportunities to preach. We were debriefing together. And this was valuable for me, but also I think valuable for them. Every Wednesday night after I'd preach, I'd call them into my office and I'd ask them to tell me two things I did well and two things I needed to work on in my delivery. And then when I gave them opportunities to do openings and closings and to preach, we would come back into my office and we'd go around the room and say, what one thing did you do well? Or actually two things that you did well and one thing you need to work on. And we did that for almost two years. Mm. And there's a lot of those guys that are still in ministry today. And so it was like when that happened, God started flipping the levers. And so I got the call to come back to Southwestern, which was really my dream job, honestly. I've often said, I think I would have probably stayed at Southwestern the rest of my life as campus pastor. I loved it. Mm-hmm. It pushed every button and checked every box for me, you know. The dilemma for me was that, as in most Christian universities, you wear multiple hats. And so the admissions director was the other hat I wore. Mm-hmm. And after our first recruiting class, we had like this record recruiting class. And I sit down at the lunch table there in the cafeteria and I'm feeling all good about myself. And then all of a sudden there was this revelation. I got to do this again and again and again. And so after 2 years, I got the call to go to the denominational headquarters. So that was a tough call. I had to pray about that decision probably more than any I've ever prayed about. I literally remember laying on the bathroom floor on my face at my house, just crying out to God, saying, what do I do? My dad was the president at Southwestern. Mm-hmm. It was my dream job. My wife worked at Southwestern. I loved the people there that I was doing ministry with. Just it was a big deal for me, but I felt like the Holy Spirit said, go. So my children were young. My oldest was, at the end, after 7 years as National Youth Director, my oldest was 9 and my youngest was 6. And I had told all the directors I worked for, I went through three different administrations in the department I worked in. I just had told them, if I ever feel like I'm losing my own kids to win everybody else's kids, I'll quit. Mm. And we started noticing that I was missing stuff. And I won't ever forget this. When I announced that I was going to resign and plant a church, and I'll come back to the church plant if you don't mind, because I think it's important to understand why we planted a church. But I remember going into my youngest son. His name's Devin. He was 6 the evening before my last trip. And I said, Dev, daddy's going to be gone in the morning. I'll be back soon. Love you. Good night. And he said, as a 6-year-old, he said, Daddy, why do you always have to be gone? Mm-hmm. And so I went back to the bedroom where Julie was at. And I just said, hey, babe, we're making the right decision. And so for the next few years, I got to drive them to school every morning, pick them up after school, go to all their ball games, coach some of their teams. They probably wished I'd have gone back on the road. But then after 7.5 years of that, you know, it was time. And we all, I tell you what happened to me was, there was this, we were attending a local church here in Oklahoma City. Julie was serving as worship leader. I was an elder and still traveling nationally and doing all that. And I just came to this understanding that the national has a role. It's about inspiration and information, but transformation takes place on the local level.
Come on.
With a pastor and a congregation that walk through life and death and marriages and babies. And so after 7.5 years of National Youth Director, I just felt like the Holy Spirit said, you need to be back involved in helping people be transformed. And so we started that church, Passion Church, with 7 couples in our living room. And 16 years later, here we are. That's a whole different story, how that took place, this latest change. It was a process, but it was fast. And we're still trying to figure it out. I'm still serving as founding pastor, preaching once a month, and Julie's still leading worship. So that's kind of the journey. A lot of twists and turns that I didn't expect, you know.
Well, talk to us about your present role and let's kind of dive in there.
So one of the things I ended up preaching about a lot, I think, as a local pastor was I talked about growing in our walk with Christ and becoming spiritually mature. And I had this, so in 20, and I'll come back to that thought, in 2023, I had been working with my elders. I had had them read a book called Next, and it's a study on pastoral succession. Because I knew, you know, I'd been there 15 years, and I knew that everything has a season and we're all interim pastors, right? Whether we die, whether we resign, whether we quit, whatever. And so I knew it. And so we had taken the whole year. I let them read that book with me. And in December of 2022, in December, I wrote down a 5 to 7 year succession plan. And we were going to take 2023 and find who was next. And then in March, the Sunday after Easter, Bishop Beecham, our presiding bishop, called me and said, I know you're going to turn me down, but I want to offer you a job. And I said, okay, I'd worked for him before. And when he said, I want you to come and be the development of clergy development director, I was like, wait a minute, I need to pray about this. And so we met. And he told me what it was about, and I prayed about it. And this comes back to that spiritual maturity. Always in my life before, when I prayed about an opportunity, I always prayed like this: God, go before me and open doors and give me signs. This one was different. I would like to think it's a sign of spiritual maturity, but I don't know if I can always get this one right. So here's the difference. This time I felt like he was behind me, saying, this is the way. I'm behind you in this. Go for it, and I'll follow up right behind you. Mm-hmm. So instead of him having to give me miracles and signs, now there were some, but I made the commitment to do this before any of those mm-hmm. really took place. There were some things that had to happen, but it was fast. It was about a 2 week period, and within by June. I was sitting in the chair I'm at in now, which is basically a two-track chair. It's to care for our ministers. We have 7,000 ministers across our denomination, 1,630-something lead pastors. It's to care for them, but also to try to help them develop and become better at what we do so that we can help those that we're called to care for, you know. And I think some of that, I think part of being strong as a minister is you have to be self-aware. I recognize if you score me out on relationship or goals, I'm a goal-driven type A hard driver, and I score really low on relationships. I'm better one-on-one. But my story and my experience of what I experienced as a local church pastor makes it possible for me to feel and know what pastors are dealing with.
Boy.
And so it's kind of interesting how it's all come full circle.
Yeah, it is. Well, we just have 2 minutes in our next episode. We want to talk more about just what you're learning in this role. What are you seeing in today's ministers? But let's end this on the topic we want to begin the next episode with, and that is your book. So just give us a quick summary of the book and kind of give us a setup for what we can talk about in the next episode.
So the funny thing is I started writing this book in 2014 out of a sermon series I preached. I woke up one early morning on a Sunday morning and called my two main staff members together and said, I've got a revelation. It was just like boom, 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 real fast. I preached the series, realized I was on to something, started trying to put it in a book form and just stagnated with it. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, it's funny, you know, Kierkegaard says we live forward and understand life best backwards. Now I understand that I was being set up. So the concept of the book is basically this, is we all want to complain about the weather of our life, but we won't let anybody deal with the climate that produces the weather. Mm-hmm. And that's true for personal life. That's true for organizations. I've seen that. I've lived in that. It's true in every scope and arena of our life. And so we talk about the kingdom climate characteristics that make kingdom weather possible. Mm-hmm. And so that's basically the concept of the book.
Well, it's really good, isn't it, Tracy?
It's so good. Congratulations on completing it. You know, and I don't care if it took you, you know, 1,300 years. It's really worth it's worth the wait, buddy.
Yeah.
And now, well, I appreciate it.
Yeah, now's such a good time for that with so much going on. And I want us to talk about a lot of those things in the next episode. And again, Tracy and I started with this, but we appreciate you. We appreciate the positive difference you have made. It was a couple of times Tracy and I would just look at each other and smile as you were talking and telling your story, because God was guiding you when you did not know what was next.
Didn't know.
Sometimes he'll give you that obvious direction, and other times it's that whisper and it's uncertainty, and we grow and develop by our own learning of what is discernment and what is wisdom, and he's given us the freedom to choose. So your story is powerful, and we'll dive in more in the next episode. But thanks again for taking time to tell your story, because we're all just kind of learning this life, trying to do the best that we can to make sure that our next steps are our best steps.
Thanks for joining us on Next Step Leadership, a weekly conversation dedicated to your personal growth and leadership development. Chris and I are so glad you joined us. You can find us on your favorite podcast providers. Do us a favor and hit subscribe. And if you really want to help us, give us a rating. We so appreciate your support. Check out our show notes for more information regarding guest contact information. Tracy Reynolds' new book, Second Chair Leadership, How to Serve, Thrive, and Lead from Where You Play, is available now at ctracyreynolds.com or Amazon. Chris Maxwell's 11th book, Equilibrium, 31 Ways to Stay Balanced on Life's Uneven Surfaces, is available now at chrismaxwell.me or Amazon, where you can find all of Chris's previous books as well. Our featured music is by Casual Americans. You can find their musical releases at casualamericans.com or your favorite music supplier. We release Next Step Leadership each Thursday, so join us again next week on the Next Step Journey, a conversation dedicated to helping you make your next step your best step. Things fail.